This is Bronson Fry with the Associated General Contractors Build Alaska podcast. I'm here this morning with Mike T. Gould from Excel Construction. Good morning, Mike. How are you doing?
Good morning, Bronson. Thank you for having me today.
Well, thanks for joining us. Your company, Excel Construction, has been associated with the AGC now for quite a while. How long has it been?
Yep, so over 30 years at this point. My dad, Mike Sr., started Excel Construction when I was just a couple years old, back in 1983. And I think within that first year, joined AGC as a networking opportunity and to just kind of, you know, get more involved in the greater industry. I guess it's about 33 years at this point.
Outstanding. So you're from Alaska then?
Yes, born and raised in South Central Anchorage. Basically grew up here playing hockey, football, and tagging along with my dad on construction jobs. Went to high school and service, and then went to school off in Colorado and, you know, on to the next adventures.
Right on. What was it like growing up here in, you know, kind of surrounded with the construction industry, being the family business and stuff like that? What was that like?
So I have several different memories when I think really far back when my dad was just getting started. A lot of it was he worked a lot. Mm-hmm. So being a small business owner, he was very often running the work and then also running the business, which is wearing multiple hats.
Right.
And I remember him always coming to my hockey games, but, you know, he'd come home, you know, and I'd be in bed a lot of time.
Mm-hmm.
And that just goes to his work ethic and his dedication to the job. But I also have a lot of memories of, you know, like take your kid to school day. Mm-hmm. And I was always excited to go to work with my dad. And sometimes we would also take other kids, you know, that couldn't attend the day with their dad at their work. And so, you know, me and a couple classmates would go with dad to different construction sites around town. And it was always an exciting, fun thing to be a part of.
Did that make you want to get into the trades yourself and work in construction also?
Well, you know, I'm not sure if it's just the inherent nepotism in many of us, or if it was, you know, peeking behind the curtain at an early age.
Mm-hmm.
But if you would have asked 12-year-old Mike what he wanted to do when he grew up, it would have been a very quick, I want to, you know, take over the company. I want to be in construction and run Excel Construction. The funny thing is my dad very much tried to have me experience other things and maybe find a different career path. And, you know, it's funny how things work out because I made a big circle and kind of wound up right where I started.
Interesting. So you grew up here, went to school out of state. What happened after that? What was that circle like that ultimately led you back into Alaska and construction?
So after high school, I went to the University of Colorado in Boulder, where I studied electrical engineering and business.
Interesting.
And in between semesters, I would come back, you know, so at Christmas time I'd come back, and summertime I'd come back to Anchorage. And my sophomore year of college, I ended up getting an internship with Siemens Building Technologies here in Anchorage.
Okay.
And that was in the industry, you know, building technologies, controls, but it was also utilizing my engineering. And I really enjoyed that internship. And I thought that that was going to be kind of where I was going to land. And then after 9/11 happened, I kind of realized maybe I needed to serve the country, and I just had the calling. I think it skipped a generation. Both grandparents were in the service.
Gotcha.
And so instead of going to work at Siemens, I enlisted in the Army, and, you know, went off to basic training and airborne school, and ended up going into special operations. 2 years of training, and became a Green Beret. Got stationed at Fort Campbell, Kentucky, and lived in North Central Tennessee for 5 years, where I had all kinds of adventures, jumping out of airplanes, shooting machine guns. Adrosuga Arabia Shwe Shwe. I speak Arabic a little bit.
Wow.
and had some excellent times in the military. Many people say I got all the best parts without having to see the worst.
Hmm.
So, you know, I got a great education. Mm-hmm. GI Bill, you know, allowed me to get a master's degree. I got my eyes fixed, so mm-hmm. I previously did not have 20/20 vision, but you know, now I do.
Wow.
You know, it was something that I'm very proud of, and that mm-hmm. I think was an excellent chapter in my life. But going in, I knew I wasn't going to be a career guy. I knew mm-hmm. I just wanted to do something other than you know, work in a cubicle and mm-hmm. And work on a computer. And so, I guess joining the military and going off on those adventures was the next chapter there.
Wow. You know, it's interesting to hear you say that. I consider myself a fan of history. And I will say that a all-volunteer military is almost unheard of in human history in any place. And it is one of the things that makes this country great. And it's people like you that volunteer to serve in times of need that make that a possibility. So I would just like to say thank you, particularly as someone who has not ever served myself. That means a lot, and so I appreciate that. And we're lucky as a country to have people like you willing to step up and do that.
Well, my pleasure, and I would do it again in a heartbeat. And sometimes I think back and say, man, maybe I should have stayed in. But everything happens for a reason, and I'm really glad that I had my time, and you're very welcome.
Thank you. Well, you know, I have gotten an opportunity to work with you a little bit and work with your company. They're signatory to the Painters and Allied Trades Union, which I'm the business representative for, and I can say I'm glad you're back because you are a great guy to work with. So what was that transition like once you came back from your time in the military? You did you go get your master's degree after that then? Or
so I only served 1 5-year enlistment on active duty, and when I got out in the summer of 2010, I actually got married 3 days before I separated from the military. So my wife was an Army wife for 3 days. I took a job with a company called Blackbird Technologies, and they're a defense contractor who specializes in intelligence technology. And I basically was doing the same thing as a contractor as I did when I was active duty, but kind of under different circumstances. So now I was in a supporting role as opposed to an active role with intelligence. And I was going back and forth to Afghanistan, 3 months on, 3 months off. And this is before my wife and I had kids.
Yeah.
And it was a great job, and I really enjoyed it. And it allowed us to kind of fast track our you know, young marriage at that point. But then once the kids showed up, my wife was a little hesitant about me going to you know, war zones.
Sure.
Totally understandable.
Right.
And so the company wanted to keep me, and they said, well, you can go to Yemen or you can go to Beirut. And I said, well, I don't know if that's going to work. So so in 2008, I left Blackbird, and my wife and I decided to move up here. And so, not 2008, 2015, I'm sorry.
Oh,
so
gotcha.
In 2015, my wife and I... No, that doesn't make sense either. Yeah, 2018. No, now I'm getting the years mixed up. But 3 years ago, we decided to move up from Tennessee to Alaska, and you know, take a role working with the family business of Excel Construction.
There you go.
So it kind of naturally fit. Mm-hmm. I knew I always wanted to work for the business, and then I, you know, left, went on some adventures, got education in engineering, in business, in mm-hmm. project management, mm-hmm. And then you kind of put all those things together, and then I came full circle back to Anchorage and started working at Excel. When I was a teenager, I was the expediter, the guy that mm-hmm. you know, drives around and delivers materials, and a general laborer, so cleaning up, sweeping, just doing whatever needs doing.
Sure.
And when I got back up here a couple years ago, that's exactly what I was doing, and I loved it. It was great. But very quickly, I got pulled into the office and started working as an assistant project manager and a project engineer. And then now I'm working as a project manager and estimator, and then also helping, you know, run the books.
So let me ask you, for those that might not be familiar with the construction industry, what are the duties of a project manager? Are you on the job site kind of overseeing things? Are you in the office dealing with materials and subs and other things, or is it totally different? What would you, how do you describe what you do as a project manager for a general contracting company like Excel Construction?
So at Excel Construction, we're a mid-size general contractor, and so my roles as a PM are slightly different than those of maybe a larger general contractor.
Okay.
I do find myself in and out of the office on any given day. You know, it might be 50-50, or I might be in the office the whole day, or I might be in the field for the majority of the day. And I mean, it's a little bit of all of what you mentioned. So a big part of it is coordination and communication.
Right.
And so the ability to give people the information and that they need to do their job, whether that's asking the right questions or getting the right people to communicate with each other, or you know, digging through a technical submittal to find one key piece of information so that then now I can go order the right material so that the guys have what they need to succeed on the job site. But I'd say generally you're managing people, you're managing material, you're managing time, and you're managing communications. It's a little bit of everything, and I find it really rewarding because every project is unique,
mm-hmm.
but then there's also commonalities amongst every project.
Sure.
You talk about project life cycle and you know the beginning, the middle, and the end, project closeout.
Yeah.
I initially was drinking from a fire hose,
right?
Just trying to figure out what is my job. And after 3 years, you know, it might take several pieces of paper to write down all the tasks that I do on any given day.
Mm-hmm.
But a big part of it is communication, and making sure that people have what they need to do their job.
I think it's interesting that you've mentioned communication a couple of times and its importance to the construction industry in, you know, in general, really whatever role you play. I think that it is one of those commonalities mm-hmm. in construction, like you said, in any particular job or any business. And I think it's one of the understated skills for a construction worker or anyone looking to get into the trades, being able to communicate open, honest, clearly with other people, I think is a huge aspect of being successful in the industry. And I'm glad you brought that up.
Absolutely. If one thing that I do is when we hire new people, I want to assess their ability to communicate.
Interesting.
And very often that can be informally in a 2-minute conversation.
Mm-hmm.
You can determine how somebody is going to communicate, how they speak, how they look, whether they're confident. Also writing. You know, we have people fill things out, just, you know, their basic information when they show up. And do they write neatly, legibly? you know, are they just chicken scratch on the paper and they're not taking much time to fill it out? And so very quickly you can determine if someone is going to be a good communicator. And it's not that you have to be, but it's just
right.
a huge asset that you bring if you can articulate your thoughts on paper and in, you know, voice.
So if you were someone looking to get into a trade, maybe as an apprentice or even a journeyman level worker who's looking to move up in the industry, what sort of ways would being a strong communicator be an asset for one of your employees out in the field? So you're working out on a construction site, swinging a hammer, paintbrush, whatever it is. How do you think communication would be an asset to a construction worker in a field?
Well, it's communication is a two-way street, and in that I mean that both the foremen, which are your field leaders, need to be able to communicate to their crew,
sure.
their journeymen and apprentices, as well as their up the food chain, so to their general foreman or to their project manager or to their home office. And very often the communication breaks down somewhere in the middle.
Sure.
And so the newest, youngest apprentice needs to be able to ask questions and you know, identify issues and then communicate that to their leadership, who then mm-hmm. needs to be able to potentially yes. document that and pass that on so that you know, problems can be solved mm-hmm. and then solutions can be identified and then implemented.
Right.
So if the information doesn't flow from the field to the office, then the solutions may not be able to flow back from the office back to the field.
That makes sense. I remember when I was working in the field, sometimes it's as simple as communicating with the other trades you're working with. Work on this side of the wall today and we'll switch tomorrow. Can I borrow your lift? Mm-hmm. Can I help you out? And then you can help me out. And some of that stuff is so fluid, you know, and it's happening every day as you go through a job site. In my experience, having a good communicator and can be a tremendous help to a company. Hell, it can save you a lot of money.
Absolutely. And that's a big one. So coordination on any given job site has a huge impact with how the job is ran, both for efficiencies for any specific trade and then overall, you know, how the pace of the job and the tone of the job are set can very early be identified mm-hmm. with either a lot of attention being given towards coordination mm-hmm. and phasing in the job or the lack thereof, and then it's just a bunch of people fighting, oh no, we're in this space, no, it's our turn,
right?
And that's where problems can arise.
Sure.
So if you start off on a good level playing field where everybody understands, you know, the schedule and then very often you'll have a successful job, whereas if everybody just shows up and starts working disjointed, that's where problems can arise.
You got it. And, you know, at most jobs, I guess, depending on how big they are, we'll have sub meetings. So mm-hmm. you've got your foreman typically from whatever crew, and they're there to work together with the general contractor. And so having somebody that can represent your company and your craft at those meetings with the other leaders of the other crafts is a huge thing.
It is. It's very critical. And sometimes those sub meetings can be well organized mm-hmm. and impactful, mm-hmm. and other times they can be disorganized and very long and drawn out. If you think about the cost of a sub meeting, I mean, everybody's mm-hmm. time is valuable,
right?
And in our trades, you know, with the wage and benefit package, labor can often cost a dollar a minute is kind of a benchmark.
Sure.
And so if you have a dollar a minute and you have 10 people in a sub meeting and it goes for an hour, well, you know, that cost of that meeting is going to be pretty high.
Sure.
And if it goes long and then there's sidebar conversations and mm-hmm. it ends up being a 2-hour meeting, mm-hmm. you know, it can be a waste of effort, value, and labor hours.
And money, yeah.
Having succinct sub meetings where you have an agenda, you keep mm-hmm. it as short as you can, and then you follow up with, you know, after the fact meetings is important. And so again, it goes to coordination, communication.
Yeah, that's a good point. You spend half the meeting talking about hunting and fishing, and you just costed yourself a ton of money.
Mm-hmm.
So as a general contractor, you're in a position where you organize these type of sub meetings on your jobs. Is that right?
Yeah, as a project manager, that's a big part of my job. And a lot of times that would also be project engineer work, is to, you know, draft the agenda for a sub meeting. And, you know, ours always starts off with, you know, just basic, not necessarily a roll call, but just making sure everyone signs the sign-in sheet, that everybody knows who everybody is. And then we start hitting on key subjects. At the top of our list is always safety. That's one thing that makes it into every single sub meeting. And mm-hmm. then we also have safety meetings. And
sure.
then we also have specific pre-task planning meetings. But safety is a huge item that is always addressed.
Good.
What are the hazards this week that were different from last week?
Mm-hmm.
And then we just start going through, the issues of the job, whether that's where are we parking or where are we working and where are we storing materials. And then we check in with the foreman or the representative for each trade or sub.
Mm-hmm.
And it's typically prioritized such that whoever has the widest overlap goes first. So, you know, as the general, you know, we're involved with everybody.
Right.
But does the tile guy whose, you know, scope of work is fairly specific,
right.
does he need to hear everything that the electrician is going to be talking about?
Interesting.
So we make a point to have the people that impact everybody go first. And then we also try to let the people that don't need to sit through the whole meeting, you know, give their two cents, and then they can be dismissed. Smart. And again, it's an effort to get people working, not just hanging out, listening to other people's issues.
Smart. I like that. So as a project manager, do you bid work, or is that a different part of the company that does that?
So Excel Construction is a very projectized organization, and that's the way that we're organized. So we have three key staff in our office, myself, a senior project manager, and then our president, and we each will bid work, manage work, and even bill the work, so that, you know, it's kind of these vertical compartments. And in years past, each of us have had support, so either a project engineer or assistant project manager. And so we grow and shrink as the economy and as our workload grows and shrinks. Many big companies will have a dedicated estimator.
Right.
And we've, you know, done that in the past. But we've really found our niche in this particular projectized fashion, where one individual, you know, gets the project, they look at the plans, and we'll all collaborate and help each other if
sure.
it's, you know, unique or challenging. But our wheelhouse is tenant improvements and commercial building renovations. And so we see a lot of the same similar type work over and over. And so I myself might... I'm going on a job walk later today. There's a mm-hmm. warehouse in town that's looking at getting renovated and repurposed. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go meet with the owner and walk the property along with the designer. At some point, we'll get drawings. From mm-hmm. those drawings, I will develop a budget, and I'll do the estimating for both our piece, and then I'll reach out to subcontractors for their scopes of work, put a budget together, and then... if it's a negotiated job, we'll move right into the work.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll develop a crew and develop a construction schedule. And once, you know, contracts are in place, we'll get to work. At that point, I am, as the project manager, you know, I just moved from estimating to project kickoff. And bigger organizations, that could happen in a handoff meeting, where the estimator comes in with the project manager and they sit down and they go over the project, and then now the project manager picks it up and takes it from there. Well, in our organization, you know, that handoff is just from one side of my desk to the other.
Right. Interesting. So you have kind of learned how to do all of these different parts of being a project manager. How do you go about learning how to look at drawings, blueprints, and then create a budget and a bid off of that? How did you learn how to do that?
That's a very good question, and there's many ways to go about doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the best estimators that I've met and worked with, both for other companies and that, you know, we've had at ours, came up through the trades. So they learn it by doing it. And, if you're a carpenter, you start learning how to read blueprints when you're in an apprentice, and then journeyman and, you know, foreman and on up the ladder. And so you learn how to read blueprints and the symbols and the scales and, you know, every detail, because details are critically important in drawings. And so you learn it by using them and working with them.
Mm-hmm.
If you are formally trained in a construction management program, like many of my peers are, you learn it, you know, through school.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're using different software programs and CAD and
interesting
takeoff programs to learn how to, you know, look at blueprints and then look at the scale and measure, okay, so many inches equals so many lineal feet of wall, and then look at your assembly for the wall and figure out, okay, I'm going to need so many studs per lineal foot of wall.
Mm-hmm.
And so whether you do it a little more old school like we do, where we have Excel spreadsheets and, you know, we're actually doing measurements,
mm-hmm.
or if you have more modern software where you just have digital blueprints and you start clicking on things,
mm-hmm.
you can learn it by doing it. Or you can learn it from school.
Interesting.
But, you know, one key thing is that it's all about the details, that's for sure.
So what are some of the details you keep an eye out for when you're looking at prints, preparing a bid or a budget for a job?
Oh, so one thing that I've learned is that the plans are to be taken as a whole. And by that, I mean, if you're the carpet guy, don't just look at the carpet plans. You got to look at, okay, look at the demo plan, which is early on in the sheets, because where walls went away, you're going to have potentially different issues than where new walls are built. And I guess it applies more as a general contractor, but being very focused, we call it having your blinders on. If the plumber's only looking at the plumbing drawings, but they're not necessarily looking at the electrical drawings, they might miss a note. And so one key detail that is always, well, not always, but very often a challenge is when there's sheet notes, which are, you know, it's just a little number one in a circle, and then you look in the bottom right corner or the top right corner, and you see, okay, you know, sheet note one or key note one, and then it gives you specific information about an item on the drawings.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if in the electrical drawings there's a note that applies to plumbing, if the plumber didn't read the electricals, then they might miss it, and so that can create problems. So being thorough is very important when it comes to working with drawings.
Yeah, no kidding. That's very insightful. So a few moments ago you were talking a little bit about the economy, or mentioned it. And I was just curious, that, from your position as a project manager, general contracting company in Anchorage, Alaska, what do you see going on out there besides the earthquake work, which was interesting, literally an act of God. Gave us all a shot in the arm a little. But what do you think, what are you seeing out there as far as our state and work opportunities in construction?
Well, there's people with rose-tinted glasses out there that are saying that, you know, we're at the bottom of this recession, mm-hmm. and that, you know, we're soon to be pulling out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's indicators that maybe that's the case.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was at a couple luncheons over the last few weeks where they've talked about, you know, numbers of people leaving the state and, you know, availability of commercial office space, and the overall decreases are slowing. So they're still negative, but they're less negative than they have been.
Right.
And if that's a trend, then soon they might be flat, and soon they actually might start, you know, ticking up.
Mm-hmm.
But in our industry, whether things are great or things are bad, you know, people, and by people, I guess I mean companies and offices, are always changing and moving. And so our specialty is basically moving walls and, you know, painting and refreshing office spaces.
Right.
And that's our core competency, our bread and butter.
Okay.
And so in a down economy, you know, people are moving from nice Class A space to more affordable Class B space.
Okay.
Well, they got to, you know, make the Class B space fit their operation, and so that means remodel their office.
Right.
So to some extent, we're fairly, you know, consistent with our business. Another one is new construction.
Right.
So right now we don't see a lot of new construction on the horizon, which is a bummer.
Right.
But what it means is that our existing buildings are valuable, and that we see investment in making old buildings new. So a lot of the buildings around town are built in the 70s and before, and their systems are starting to fail. So their air handlers and their roofs and their windows and they need to be kept up so that they can maintain value. And so we see a lot of renovation type work. But I guess to your question, you know, we don't see like the engineers and the professional services really busy and growing, which, you know, it's a trickle down indicator.
Sure.
If architects aren't designing stuff, then engineers aren't engineering what the architects design.
Right.
And then the construction companies aren't building what the engineers have engineered or the architects have designed.
Right.
There's a lot of you know, investment with government, particularly up north in Eielson and Clear.
Right.
And that will have a trickle down effect into our local economy in Anchorage.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that, you know, we are in for some lean times.
Sure.
But the lean times will end. It's just the cycle of Alaska.
Right. Have you seen a lot of workers leaving the state? You mentioned that a little bit ago.
Yes, unfortunately. So as our local economy has waned, the greater economy in the lower 48, particularly in the Seattle and Oregon area and Idaho, has been booming. And so a lot of our skilled tradespeople have been leaving the state where they may have inconsistent work, so that they can go down and, have steady, consistent work, for a couple years. And I've seen that, as far as it affects us, both carpenters and taper painters have, been heading down to Seattle, Oregon area, where they know that they're going to have a couple years of steady work. And I definitely don't blame them.
Sure.
People need to take care of their families and their careers.
Do you have any thoughts or ideas for how we might develop our workforce here in Alaska?
So that's interesting, and it's important. We do have an aging workforce.
Right.
And the trades schools and apprenticeship programs, from what I can tell, don't quite have the numbers of applicants that we've seen in years past.
Mm-hmm.
And that's concerning as an industry overall. And so I'm actually on the AGC subcommittee for education, training, and workforce development.
Nice.
And one thing we're charged with is helping inform the future workers of opportunities. So similar to your podcast, we want to make sure that people understand that there is opportunities in the trades, whether it's painters and allied trades, or carpenters, or IBEW.
Sure.
There's just so many different opportunities for young people, as one way I like to put it, get to work as opposed to get to debt. And by that I mean you can graduate high school and go into a trade and be earning a very good living wage very quickly, mm-hmm. or you could go spend years in college racking up debt and then graduate and then really still not know what you want to do.
Right.
And now not know what you want to do, not have a potential career, working maybe in a restaurant or a barista or something, and have a whole bunch of debt hanging over your head.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I spend a fair amount of time myself doing outreach into the schools and other parts of the community, talking about apprenticeship programs and career opportunities in construction, career being the operative word. This doesn't have to be a summer job. It can be a good career. You can make a livable wage. And just letting the youth in our community know that they have another option besides just college or just McDonald's. That you there is another quality path, and I don't know what societal trends and forces led to the perception over the last decades that construction was not a good choice, or that that's the last option or whatever, but it is definitely time for us to shift our thinking on that as a community and as a country even. And not the least of which, reasons why, is that we have an aging workforce, like you said. So the economy notwithstanding, and that will come back, and I agree, whether it's this year or next year, there is a certain cyclical component to that. But it's not going to matter if everybody that we have who has been doing this work is now retiring and they're not able to work, or they've left or whatever. And so there is, I think, a looming issue that is looming ever closer and ever larger with our aging workforce, specifically in the construction, skilled trades. And there does need to be, I think, a re-emphasis on the opportunities mm-hmm. that people have to start a career in the construction trades in whatever industry that might be. So I'm glad from my position as a union business representative to hear someone in your position who runs a construction company kind of recognizing collectively here together, like, hey, we really got to work together to get the word out and promote our trades as a good career option. And I think we'll continue to do that together, mm-hmm. Moving forwards, and that will be a good thing. We had an apprenticeship opening in our union just this last week. We had interviews all day Monday and Tuesday. I was interviewing the applicants, and they are out there. There are good attitude, hard work, you know, people that want to get in these trades and start an apprenticeship. Some of them coming right out of high school. Some of them are coming right out of college mm-hmm. and realizing that they're having struggles, you know, making ends meet. The challenge, and I'm sure you recognize this, is that with a slow economy, it's hard to get someone enough steady work to complete, yeah. you know, like an apprenticeship or to learn all of the, you know, aspects of a trade. So there's this fine balancing act mm-hmm. of recruiting people into the industry and then making sure that we've got the work opportunities for them to actually learn how to do their job.
Right.
And that is where a healthy economy is really helpful.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully we can see our economy turn around here and then continue these efforts to draw in like what you might call the next generation
right.
of skilled craftsmen and women. So, I would like to know if you have any advice, and, you know, kind of to wrap this up a little for someone looking to get into the trades as a leader in a quality company that's been here in Alaska and Anchorage for 3 decades, you know what you're talking about. So what would you tell the men and women out there that might be thinking about their future or thinking about starting in a career? If you had just a couple words of advice, what might they be?
I guess one thing would be that regardless of what profession or career you choose or trade that you're interested in, when you approach it wholeheartedly and commit, I think good things tend to happen. I think when people just kind of put a toe in the water and they're just kind of, you know, on a rocking chair almost, just they don't really know what they want to do, then that's where they are more likely to, you know, try something and then quit and try something and quit. And very often those people have a history of that.
Yes.
But if you treat it as a career and you show up and you are professional in your demeanor and in your dress and in the way you present yourself, you're going to stand out. And so when you show up for any potential interview or job, or even if you just want to, you know, talk to somebody, just make sure you're dressed right, that you, you know, combed your hair, have a clean shirt on, brush your teeth, and that if you're going to fill anything out, you know, just write legibly. It doesn't seem like a lot, but that little bit can be the difference of a callback or, you know, getting involved, or someone maybe just writing you off as, oh man, I'm not going to hire that guy. I don't even want to talk to that guy or that girl. You know, they're just a soup sandwich, as they would say in the Army, just a mess.
Gotcha. So to summarize, if I'm looking back at my notes here as we've been talking, the key skills for somebody, communication, writing, being presentable, clean. You might be working in an office. So you guys do a lot of this.
We do a lot of occupied
much less
work,
a hospital or a school or something where you really can't be super grubby. You know, mm-hmm. you want to go in there and be presentable and committed. You want someone committed to a career in the trades. And I really appreciate you highlighting these things, because I don't know if that is necessarily the things that are highlighted to people looking to get into the trades. And I'm really appreciate that you did that, because I think it's absolutely true as well. I mean, those are really important skills to have. It's not just strong back, weak mind, whatever the prior generation's concept of how to be a construction worker. So I appreciate that you highlighted those things.
Two more to add to that list would be work ethic. That's a huge one.
Good.
Just doing whatever it is you're doing with a purpose, doing it quickly, but not so fast that you're making mistakes, but just, you know, as opposed to dragging and just,
yep.
you know, whining and being sad about what you're doing, do it with a purpose.
Yeah.
And then also attention to detail and critically thinking. Critically thinking, if everybody in the world was always critically thinking, we'd have far fewer accidents, we'd have far fewer issues. And I think just the world would be a better place if everybody just thought about, okay, what am I doing? What are the consequences of me doing it wrong?
Mm-hmm.
What are the positives of me doing it right? How could mm-hmm. I do it better? And why am I doing this? Why did my foreman ask me to do it this way as opposed to the other way?
Right.
And just, yeah, not having a bad attitude. So
You got it. So the oldest adage probably in construction, which is we never have time to do it right the first time, but we always got time to come back and fix it later. You know, how does that work? You know, take the time to do it right the first time. You will always save money. You will always come out ahead at the end.
Oh, yeah. An ounce of protection is worth a pound of cleanup. I mean, the list goes
one.
On and
That's
on.
A good one.
with adages, that's for sure.
Right, yeah. Well, this has been insightful, enlightening for me. I mean, it's been nice to get to chat with you and get to know you a little more. I really appreciate your time coming in and doing this podcast. I appreciate your company's commitment to excellence within the industry in Alaska, and I look forward to working with you more in the future.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, Bronson. It's been a pleasure to be here with you today. Thank you for the invitation. It's been nice talking with you as well, and I hope we get to do it again sometime.
All right, we will. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Alaska Works Podcast, brought to you by a generous contribution from the Construction Industry Progress Fund and the Associated General Contractors of Alaska.